The editing's so snappy, the music's so snappy.
I think the premise is completely inspired.
Their fallout at the party is the most authentic moment
right.
of being a girl with teenage friends.
It's really well done, and it's also just knockabout funny, and Gigi's the best.
It's in the tradition of American Graffiti, the big night in your life that you do not realise will be the night that you'll be reflecting on decades later. It really captured that beautifully.
And then they realise, oh my God, we've never taken any risks. So that's it. It's like the final night that they've got together. They're going to take some risks. They're going to do some dumb shit. And that's it. That's the setup.
Hello, film fans. Joining us remotely today, we have Ben.
Hello.
Robbie.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Hey.
And we're here to review Booksmart. Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us remotely, we have Ben and Robbie. If you could please say hello to our lovely listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Ben, you take this one.
Sure. Yeah, I'm Ben Bailey-Smith. I'm an actor and writer and a presenter. And I love talking about film. That's why I'm here, really. And who better to talk about film with than my esteemed entertainment colleague, sometime colleague.
Yeah, me. My name's Robbie. I'm the film critic at The Telegraph. And as Ben mentioned, sometimes on Wistertainment as well, sometimes elsewhere on the radio too. And that's it. Film critic, film critic, film critic.
Well, thank you very much, guys, for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure. And as I said, I think most people who listen to this will know you guys from Wittertainment, and the voices will seem familiar, at least. So I was keen to get you guys on. You work together on Wittertainment, and we've had a few other Wittertainees on the show and on FlixWatch in the past. So we're trying to get everyone else in. Sanjeev's on the list somewhere.
He's got the silkiest voice of like all time. There's something about the way that bass is just so, I don't know what it is, just so smooth, man.
A real actually mellifluity. It's beautiful.
Yes.
The combination of Sanjeev and Paddington 2 was a light as well.
That was like it's meant to be.
I've known you guys for a while, and yeah, Ben, I've seen you stand up live as Doc Brown a couple of times. The last one being in really? Oslo. I think you're supporting Ricky Gervais.
Oh my gosh, Oslo! That would have been like 2012.
Yeah, 2012, 2011.
Wait. Was it like a nightmare? Like, was I just dying for 10 minutes and people were finding their seats? Was it that one in the little theater or the big one?
It was a big theater.
It was the spectrum. That's like 10,000 people.
Yeah, it was a big one.
Okay, no, I killed that night. That's all good. What you don't know.
Why did you bring the other one up?
What you don't know is exactly. the night before, this is true. The night before, I met Ricky Gervais for the first time.
Oh, really?
In Norway. Yeah.
So I'd
spoken to him
friends.
On the phone. No. I'd spoken to him on the phone. He'd seen me on YouTube. He invited me to come open for him. I'm like, this is actually happening. Right? I was just in my garden. I got a call. Next thing I know, I'm getting flown business class to Oslo. I meet him backstage before the warm-up for the Spectrum, right? Spectrum, like I say, it's like 10,000 people. So you warm-up in a little theater, it's like 1,500, maybe 1,000. And I'm feeling confident. I've written Norwegian gags on the plane over there, and I've got some other stuff I'm going to improv around. I'm feeling confident. I've just got to do 20 minutes. And I get on stage and there's like 25 people sat down and the rest are just like walking around, trying to find their seats, getting drinks and stuff. It's bedlam and my clock's just ticking down, you know? And then there's an argument in the front row between these guys who'd taken these girls' seats. So I was having to sort that out. then get this new wave of people came in and they were all like fussing over where they were sitting. And I got halfway through and I was just like, this is it. Like, I looked over to my left. Ricky had pulled up a little milking stall and he was just sat in the wings watching me die. And I was just like, I just sighed and I went to the mic and I said, look, I'm just going to be real. This is what's happening right now. So I told him that whole, you know, what I'd been through, you know, meeting Ricky Gervais for the first time is a big moment for me on a personal level and on a professional level for my career. And I'm fucking ushering. Do you know what I mean? And from there, like, I sort of had him and I kind of pulled it back. But we went for a beer afterwards and that was it. That was the start of our relationship. We've been friends ever since and worked on, look, all the things we've done together since. Yeah. That was the very first thing ever.
Can I ask, was there a Norwegian gag that you felt was underappreciated because of the general hubbub in the room? One of the specific ones.
Yeah, maybe wrote. Maybe thinking that Jo Nesbø was a rapper. Don't think that went.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. No love.
That's good, guys. I like that.
Jo Nesbø. Very good.
Well, we're here to talk about films. As we talked about Wittertainment, these guys know about films, as Robbie and Ben. Ben, you've chosen Booksmart. So can you tell us why you chose it and give us a synopsis in less than 60 seconds.
Well, it was the one film that was left that wasn't on the list you sent me. No. genuinely, I chose this film because my kids recommended it. And they've been recommending it for ages since they saw it. And I just haven't got round to it. So seeing that it was on Netflix, I thought, oh, perfect. And, you know, and no one else had chosen it. So I actually watched it because my kids recommended it. And they know comedy. Like, they find the comedy that I find funny. And they really clock the stuff that I hate, they hate independently. I haven't forced it on them. Yeah. So they show me stuff like, and I'm like, yes, you know what, you know, like Andy Samberg, you know, one of my daughters really put me onto Andy Samberg, you know, so like.
That's part of Lonely Island or in separate.
Bit of Brooklyn Nine-Nine and a bit of I Threw It on the Ground, you know, so bit of both. But yeah, they know funny. So I was like, let's have a crack at this. Synopsis in 60 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
60 seconds, okay. So there's two girls, Molly and Amy. They're about to graduate, but they've always been nerds. It's a high school in LA. They've always been nerds and they've never really pushed the boat out or tried to do anything too risky because they're so focused on, you know, the next steps of their lives. You know, Amy's going to Africa to do an internship. Molly's going to Yale. And then they realize, oh my God, everybody else, all these guys that have just dicked around and been to parties, they're also going on to great things. And we've never taken any risks. So that's it. It's like the final night that they've got together. They're going to take some risks. They're going to do some dumb shit. And that's it. That's the setup. What dumb shit are they going to do? And it's, yeah, it's very much a sort of, I found it like a throwback film to the, like, just stupid 80s stuff, but mainly with girls, which made it kind of refreshing.
Well, no, I saw Robbie nodding his head there. What were your thoughts, Robbie?
Yeah, I had actually missed this when it was released in the cinema. The weird thing about the Booksmart release was I think it came out the same week as two enormous things, wasn't it? It was like Aladdin and Rocket Man or something like that. It was up against two serious crowd drawing machines. And it became in a weird way this referendum on will we, you know, if we release high quality comedy that is not playing to all four quadrants, as they say. So, you know, both sexes, all ages, this is something for absolutely everyone. We release a film that's slightly more targeted than that, and it's great. And it's got a great critical groundswell of support behind it. Can it still connect with a wide audience? And the answer of Booksmart was no. I mean, it did okay, but it wasn't the hit, I think, that its distributors had hoped for. So I'd missed it because my colleague Tim had reviewed it and I had put off reading up about it because the reviews were good enough to make me think, okay, so I want to try and experience this with a completely clean frame of reference. So I watched it for the first time on Valentine's Day, which at the time of recording was two nights ago, with my other half. And the...
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this is the first time I've seen it. So the I think the premise is completely inspired because it is... The idea is very relatable. If at school you were an enormous loser like I was, you can kind of... You see this way
that
you've completely jeopardized your social life for 6 years to with absolutely zero material gain at the end of it. And just when that first piece clicks into place, we just both fell about laughing, and we continued to fall about laughing for the rest of it. I think it's a really consistently funny, and I know consistently sounds like damning with faint praise, but there's a consistency to the quality of the comedy in this that just makes you think every scene, oh, that was great. Oh, that was great. And then you're on to the next one. Oh, that was great too.
Mm. And it's, you know what? It's comedy is my thing. And I personally, my favorite type of comedy is the silliest. I love clever, twisty, surprising, intricately written comedy and non-comedy comedy and all of that stuff. But there's very little that gets me laughing more than just really silly, raucous stuff. And this just sort of gets hold of you, like Robbie says, and then it just doesn't let up. I don't think this film would have worked for me at all if any frame of it was a little bit more lingered on. Like if it was a little bit slower in the editing, I just would have thought this is just like Porky's with girls. Like, who cares? You know, you're just dragging out every gag. They don't drag out anything. It's just bam, 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 bam. If there's not a gag here, just bring Gigi back. Again, just throw her in there. Like, oh shit, it's Gigi again. How did you get here? Like, just silly stuff. Bang, 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 bang. Mixed with like quite like the weirdest sort of edgy end of comedy. Like when they meet the pizza guy, stuff like that sort of keeps it just on the edge. Language wise, the F-bomb is just through the roof. The language is outrageous, but at the same time, like, it's teenagers. Like, and when you watch teenagers on screen, no one swears. You're like, what the fuck is this? Who are these teenagers? So like Robbie says, there's that relatable angle. But yeah, I just thought the pace of it felt like a real good old fashioned knockabout comedy. But what makes it contemporary is the editing's so snappy, the music's so snappy. They build those characters so quick that when I was watching the end credits, it was like seeing the yearbook of your old friends, like each one getting the water balloon popping on their face. I was like, oh, that guy, that girl. Oh, I loved him. Oh, he was so cool. Oh, he was so fun. I properly just became a teenager watching it. You'll know that by how many likes I've put in this review of the film.
Helen, have you seen Booksmart before?
Yeah, I didn't see it at the cinema, but I kind of caught it when it came onto, it was probably maybe Amazon before it came onto Netflix. And I was a bit disappointed because I did not love it as much as I was expecting to, and as much as it had been built up. There's a lot of things that I really, really do like about it. Like you've already just mentioned, Billie Lord is amazing. And every time she's on the screen, she's amazing and exciting. But there's some other things, as particularly this time around watching it for the second time, which I think I can attribute to the fact that I'm quite picky with comedy anyway, and it's maybe a sign that I'm getting old and are therefore no longer going to enjoy things that kids enjoy or find cool or relevant. So I think that's probably part of me. But it was interesting this time around, I realised it's got four writers, so four people put this together, and I think that kind of shows in the writing. And I think some of the characters for me could have gone and it could have made some of the others a little bit tighter, because there's a lot of kids who you kind of meet at the start and then they just kind of, you don't really come back to them, which I think chopping a couple of them out would have made the other ones a little bit stronger. So I really, really, really wanted to like this a lot more than I did in reality. And the music is so loud.
Music
like,
is loud.
This is a sign that just obviously it's me, an old person. I'm like, oh my god, another song. It just felt like a lot of music videos over and over again, and I understand that I sound like an 80-year-old woman. I'm sorry, 80-year-old women are probably not gonna enjoy it, or maybe they will, I'm not sure.
Well, I mean I'm definitely older than you, Helen, but I could see those elements, and I know exactly what you're saying. There's I felt it needed to be noisy, loud, fast, super choppy, to just keep that comedy going, because it's that level of comedy. This is not, you know, Death of Stalin. Do you know what I mean? This is not cerebral comedy. It's knockabout silly stuff. And with that stuff, you kind of have to like keep it rolling. Do you know what I mean? And I and that's why it worked for me.
If this had been in the hands of Judd Apatow or early Adam McKay, where it could have just had the camera locked, sat there, and they would have riffed off people.
It wouldn't work.
All the energy would have gone from it. I agree with you with the energy. And in terms of the setup of the characters, I love how the first time you see Amy and Molly, they're doing their stupid dance. Amy pulls up in the beat up Volvo. They do the stupid dances. Molly's coming down the stairs. I love to see you. And then, you know, all those kind of robotic moves. And, you know, that establishes their relationship and friendship just right there. And it's just, I love buddy films where it's just the love between two people is shared and you can see it and you know it's real and know it's visceral. And I think this is one thing, this is Olivia Wilde's directorial debut. And I think that shows in how she's portrayed these women. Because I think a lot of people cast this off as the female Superbad. I think it's got a lot more to it than Superbad, where Superbad was just a bit more crass. This had one of the main characters was lesbian, and it wasn't played for nudity in any way. It was just kind of played for this is her life, and she's got equally those bits where she's scared to meet the person that she fancies, she's scared to talk to the person that she fancies, and she's got the same relatable anguishes that other people have. And I just really love that well-rounded nature that supplied us then with Gigi moments where she dives off the boat, and Jared, being who's just a bit of a loser but also just really he's got low self-esteem but needs to feel like he's, you know,
he was one of my favorite characters. I think Helen's probably right in maybe you could have a small cull, but if there was a cull, it would be more like just pulling back on the two gay kids with their sort of drama. I thought that was all pushed too far. The murder mystery, all of that stuff is too far because
if they missed out going to that house,
that was a bit too much. But like, yeah, smaller characters like your man with the boat. I loved him. And maybe they turned him around too quick. But again, like I say, this was recommended to me by children. So I didn't go into it thinking it's going to be a cinematic masterpiece. I was very kind of ready for it to just be a lot of fun. And that it kind of served its purpose in that. If you talk about coming of age movies, like for me, it can't even come close to something like Kings of Summer. But it's a different, they're trying to do something different. Do you know what I mean? There's a little bit of schmaltziness in this, but really they're just going, we're going to do some dumb shit. Like they probably, that's probably a line in the movie. Let's go and do some dumb shit. So it's, the lack of pretension to it, I think is another thing that helped me enjoy it for what it was. If that makes sense. But one thing I did want to ask you, Helen, because you got three men here talking about, oh, it felt so relatable. True. From a woman's point of view, like, was there anything in there that rang true when you think about that age, that awkward age?
100%. Their fallout at the party is the most authentic moment of being a girl with teenage friends.
Yeah, I found that powerful, that argument, especially the way they had the guts to just sort of fade it out, you know? Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, this being a directorial debut of an actress, I think it's really interesting because we often think of actors as being great directors of acting, but Olivia Wilde really brings like a fully formed vision to this. Like she's the way she shoots her stars in close-up is really beautiful. The way she kind of, as we've talked about, the kind of the pacing of it, the rhythm of the film is really, there's a lot of attention being paid to that. Even these little crazy forays into stop motion when, you know, when they hallucinate themselves as dolls. I mean, it's kind of, it's a big swing, and it's not necessarily something you can imagine an actor who is trying to, you know, having their first stab at directing doing. So I think it's got this really fully formed feel to it that I was really taken by. The other thing I want to say about the cluttered supporting cast, I really love this. And I think it goes back to what Ben said about this being like flicking through a yearbook, you know. People grab for Superbad because it was the most recent example, I think, of this kind of film. But for me, this is kind of, it's in the tradition of American Graffiti or Dazed and Confused. Mm. It's this idea that it's the big night in your life that you do not necessarily realize will be the night that you'll be reflecting on throughout your 20s, your 30s, your 40s and beyond. And I love the fact that this was a film that Ben was introduced to by his kids, because it proves it connects on both of those levels. You know, it plays authentic to people who are that age, but it also connects with, you know, if you can remember that from 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago in your life, you remember what it's like to be at that stage of your existence and to be experiencing this kind of pivotal night that you don't necessarily realize is going to be pivotal in the ways it's going to be pivotal at that time. You know, I can think back to growing up in Edinburgh. I won't bore you with the stories. There's nothing kind of, you know, remotely approaching this kind of night out. But those evenings that you kind of think, oh, well, let's go to this party or let's, you know, do this, do that. And then it's the kind of experience that stays with you, you know, decades later. It really captured that beautifully.
When you said Days of Confused, that's absolutely right. And that's still one of my favourite films, Days of Confused, just the type of things you don't have now as an adult, as a 40-plus-year-old person. You don't just go to one place and then go to the next place with no kind of idea what's going to happen next. And one thing I do love about the film is that I felt so happy that Molly and Amy got to experience that at least once. Because it would have been it would have been super sad if they couldn't. But also, I really love the conceit of this in that they thought they were, hoity-toity, but also, no, they were prejudging their schoolmates who were also onto Yale, who were getting six-figure salaries at Google straight away. Oh, it's no Apple, but, you know. And I love that conceit, and I think it's really well done, and it's also just knockabout funny, and Gigi's the best.
Gigi is the best. I just realized when Robbie was speaking, I'm not sure if I said that my children are teenagers. That it's not like a five-year-old came in and said to me, Daddy, you must watch this film where this girl accidentally fingers another girl in the butthole and pukes on her breasts. That didn't happen. My kids are teens, so everybody just calm down.
Did anyone else start doing the mental maths when the kind of retro karaoke classic turns out to be Alanis Morissette, You Ought to Know? You realize, because that's that song for these kids is like, you know, so tunes of yesteryear.
So old.
I gave up when I realized because you know, you start doing, okay, so hold on. That song came out then. If we count forward, when I realized they weren't alive when the record was released, I just stopped. Because you don't want to know beyond that.
Yeah.
That's awful enough.
Absolutely. If you play ironic to a kid now, they'll just go, what's she on about? If it rains on your wedding day, that's just fucking unlucky. What's she on about?
Well, let's talk a bit about the supporting cast, because that's how the Days Confused and American Graffiti, which I found out recently is coming to Netflix, should be on Netflix
by the time
it's come out. Great. And I've only seen that once and wasn't paying attention to it when it happened, so I'm super excited for when that lands on Netflix. But I think your point there was, Robbie, these kind of, it's focused on Amy and Molly, but the supporting cast is brilliant. And then I also love the teachers, the adults in this, who have a supporting role and add to the timbre of the night. What were your thoughts, Helen, on the supporting guys?
The supporting cast is great. The incredible Jessica.
Yeah, Jessica Williams.
Incredible. I loved her character until they gave her an inappropriate romance with a young boy, which they kind of like gloss over.
Weird. Why was that in there? I couldn't work that out. Yes,
it was a shame
agreed.
Because like Miss Fine is fine, and I kind of loved like the little relationship she had with Molly and Amy, and I thought it was a shame that it went down that route, and I'd kind of forgotten about that the first time round. So that's kind of a bit of a shame. I had no idea that Billie Lord is Carrie Fisher's daughter. So that was
really
a new revelation for me.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean the whole cast is great. Beanie and Caitlin are just, you genuinely feel that they could have been friends forever. In fact, they apparently spent like 10 months living together as like prep for the film.
Amazing.
And you really do feel that. And it is great to see, a young cast really lead the film and just, you know, take the wheels and go for it. And it's nice to see Lisa Kudrow as well in roles. I always enjoy seeing her very long neck and in films. So
I think it's nice to see Lisa Kudrow in anything. Lisa Kudrow is like a female Jason Alexander in that she is problematic to the industry for no other reason than she nailed a character so brilliantly that it's impossible to see her in anything else. So she gets the Jason Alexander punishment throughout her career in that she just so nailed a character that everybody saw that you just can't cast her in anything else, because everyone just goes, that's Phoebe. But she's actually super talented and so funny. And she can do off-kilter funny in a lot of different ways, not just ditzy, I'm an idiot, which obviously
the comeback
she nailed.
Is like outstanding if you watch that.
there you go. You know, it's a shame. It's a shame. But I was, yeah, I was very happy to see her.
The last time
in a way that I don't feel for, like, Courtney Cox or Matt LeBlanc. Do you know what I mean? I was really happy to see Lisa Kudrow.
I think the supporting cast in this has got a really strong, oh, yeah, it's them factor. Like, even like Jason Sudeikis popping up. And, you know, you're just happy to see these people. And the Jessica Williams thing was, you know, when she shows up in the car and she's listening to What's Golden, Jurassic 5. That was, I feel, a real shout out to the late 30s, early 40s crowd watching. You know, so here's a real tune.
Yeah.
Kids don't know you're born.
You don't know about this one. You don't know about this one, son. J5. Ask your uncle. That's a great shout.
But yeah, I think it's just, it's and they're not, you know, they're not overplayed. They're there for as long as they need to be to make it. And actually, on the point of the film making them make these bizarre, awkward, sort of slightly stone and shoe like choices, like the inappropriate relationship, right? I think these are the kind of things that can make a film stick with you, even if it's something that irritates you in the moment. You know, it's the kind of thing your mind starts chewing over. So it's like if a, you know, the oyster swallows the piece of grit and that's required to make the pearl, right? You need these little irritating factors. And sometimes, you know, we were talking about Uncut Gems on the other podcast, and obviously that's a film full of irritations, and so your mind keeps turning over and chewing. But I think it's great that a film like Booksmart, which is being made in an ostensibly quite commercial genre, will make choices that, you know, okay, so here's something that may not sit with you particularly easily, but we're going to throw it in there. And the thing with the pizza delivery guy, it reminded me of
that made me laugh.
Yeah, right. But it's like in Les Demoiselles de Rochefort, you know, the Jacques Demy musical, where suddenly it turns out the supporting character has been this, oh, we're not allowed to do spoilers. Okay, so it turns out a supporting character who seemed very innocent is not. And it's just this weird kind of like, what? And the film kind of glides on past it. And I love that it kind of was prepared to do those odd, jarring things in a way that, you know, because those are the ways that a film gets its hooks into you, I think.
Yeah,
and you're right to say that it's clearly making a leap for the mainstream. It's not, do you know what I mean? This is not trying position itself as some really weird indie thing that's just been discovered. It's got elements of that in the feel of certain bits, but it's squarely like, this is going to be the teen romp of the summer. Like, that's the vibe. Mm-hmm. And for that, I think it does really well. But I definitely agree with you, Helen. That teacher sideline threw me a little bit. Although it does happen, I just, whenever I see that in comedy, or like, because 21 Jump Street, same thing. You always think, yes, but if it was a male teacher and a female child, it would just be so creepy. Like, why is it always fine the other way around? It's funny the other way around. Apparently, according to Hollywood, I never quite have that same reaction. But then maybe that's because I've got kids. Who knows? I don't know. But yeah, overall, I thought it was a hit rather than a miss.
Before we head to the scores, if there's anything else you want to say as well, do say so now. But this year, I think it was 2018 it came out, and that was a good year for me for teen coming of age films. You had mid-90s come out then.
Oh, I didn't like mid-90s at all.
You didn't like
so
it?
So boring. Oh, man. Nothing happened. It was so boring.
Also, nothing does happen.
So self-indulgent. It really irritated me, that film.
And also, he fell off the roof. Came out that
what
year.
Do you mean nothing happened?
He fell off the roof. I think I might have been asleep by then.
Eighth Grade as well was that came out that year, which I also
that
was
good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think as you get older, I'm glad I still relate to these kind of stories and still fit in with those stories. And with their Amy and... they kind of had their redemption and people like them at the end, even though they kind of self-ostracize themselves. But it's those nights where you do find out, you do suddenly become friends with people who you weren't able to connect with. And that's one thing I really took away from this as well. Nice. Yeah. Anything else you guys want to say before we head to the scores?
No, I think we're good.
Let's go.
Hello, folks. I'm Sam.
And I'm Martin.
And every week for the last 5 years, we've got together to talk about the musician Tom Waits.
He's a gravelly voice singer that sounded like he doused his vocal cords in bourbon and set fire to them with a cigarette and wrote such classic songs as Way Down in the Hole, Downtown Train, Jersey Girl.
He's also the gravelly-voiced actor from films such as The Ballad of Buster Scruggs and Seven Psychopaths, both of which, coincidentally, are on Netflix, and both of which Kobe and Helen have discussed here on FlixWatcher.
So make sure you check those episodes out, and when you have a little bit of a taste for the magic that is Tom Waits, why not head over to songbysongpodcast.com or search for Song by Song in your podcatcher of choice to listen to a little bit more about Tom Waits.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish on your scores. And we'll start with you, please, Ben, with your recommendability.
It's a 4 for me. It's only really a 4 because I know like a lot of people just like you were saying, Helen, about like the noise of it. I can think of many people in my life that I love and I think have great taste in films who I probably wouldn't tell them to watch Booksmart, either because they hate that level of foul language. There's a lot of swearing in this film, a lot. Or they just that constant barrage of music and choppy cuts. Those two things might irritate them. That's the only reason it's a 4. It is a great film. Everyone should watch it. So, but it's a 4. It's not quite perfect.
Robbie?
I would go along with that completely. It's a 4 for me as well.
Helen?
I'm also going to give it a 4. I just really wanted to like it a lot more because of the cast, that it was two kind of females. But then I also kind of accept that I'm not that massively into teen films when I think about the films that Kobe's mentioned and he's gone like, I love the Dazed and Confused. I saw that recently and went, it was all right. So, you know, I don't think it is for everyone, but I do 100% think it's for anyone like under the age of like 17.
I'm going to go for 4.5 because, yeah, I think Mark's away for the amount of swearing because it makes it more difficult to recommend to younger and older people alike as well. Repeat viewing score. Ben, this is your first time for you and Robbie both watching this, so you might have to project a bit.
Well, for me to watch a comedy film again, it would take a lot. So this is not a slight on Booksmart. I don't tend to return to comedy films that aren't The Jerk, which is possibly my favourite movie of all time. But that's for another podcast. I just find once I remember the jokes, that's kind of it, unless it's just delivered in a way. Like, I can watch old ones again, like Marx Brothers, Harold Lloyd, I can watch over and over again. But they've become like songs. They've become like musical albums in my heart and my head. Booksmart... Yeah, I mean, that's probably the only comparison I'd give it to Superbad. I feel like, yeah, I've done Booksmart. I'm okay. I can move on. So I give it a 2.5.
Okay, Robbie.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a 3 for repeat viewing because I do imagine myself watching it again at some point. But I think it's, as we're saying earlier, kind of to me, it feels like a variation on a really staple theme of teen movies, you know, the life-changing night, the life-changing 24-hour period. And I would probably go back to Dazed and Confused, you know, the sort of the originating text of that, or American Graffiti as well, or Ferris Bueller, something like that, before revisiting this. I'm trying to think if I've rewatched Superbad since seeing it. I think I did a couple of times. But more just as kind of background noise of an evening. I think this is a better film than Superbad. Yeah. But I think I would probably return to what to me feel like the kind of foundational text of the genre before this one.
Yeah, that's such a great point. That's exactly how I feel. Like, I can't wait to watch Kings of Summer again, you know? And I think that's because it's not just about the jokes. There's the drama of it. There's something really real in there, you know? It gives me those Stand By Me feels, that film, you know? Anyway, moving on.
Helen.
So I don't think enough time had elapsed between the first time I watched this and the second time. So I think that probably added a little bit to it. It's really interesting what you say about rewatching comedy, in that it's kind of hard to have those first real hard laugh out loud moments again, unless it's kind of a different kind of comedy, which this is very much, you laugh at kind of the absurdity and the shock and the weirdness, and you're like, I've got absolutely no idea where this is going next. And then once you kind of know where it is going, it doesn't become as kind of sort of absurd or as like, that's completely ridiculous. So I don't know. I would like to know more from people who watch it loads and loads and loads, what they kind of get out of it. So yeah, well, I'm going to go with you, Ben, 2.5.
My eldest daughter would say Gigi, and that's, you know, like to her, Gigi is a queen. Like this, she always calls Gigi the queen. So I think with teenagers, they do rewatch a lot of stuff because that one of my kids' favorite words is iconic. They love they love things that, like, it, I guess because they experience footage in life in a different way to what we would have grown up with. They're constantly experiencing things in within the minutiae, you know, scenes, GIFs, memes. I think they do love, like, picking out classic bits. So they'll watch a film again, film it. Like my younger daughter, she films stuff and sends it around, like, ah, oh, you know, just her laughing at a classic scene from some comedy that she's watched. So I think they experience in a different way. I think there's rewatchability for kids, but maybe not so much for us. And that thing that you couldn't put your finger on, Helen, about comedy, I think the thing is artistry. There's like levels to comedy. Booksmart is exactly how you described it. Setups, silly situations. I should give a shout out to the four writers on there, because a lot of the time you have more than one writer on a comedy is because you have a chief writer, storylines there and lots of funny stuff, but you want to gag it up. So you'll get guys in a room to sit around and just toss stuff around. So that's often why you see more than one writer. It's not so much that they just couldn't decide what the story was, it's that they needed to add gags, like get some funny people in the room and just toss some stuff around, which is maybe what happened there. But yeah, so these guys have got together, written loads of gags for this film, set up gags. You've got a film like The Jerk with Steve Martin. It's a performance. Like what he's doing is like there's clowning to it. There's things he's doing with his body that you can't write on a piece of paper. It's just some crazy shit that he thought up, that he finds funny, that he's giving because there's just no self-consciousness to him, you know? And that stuff I can watch on a loop for like ad nauseum, you know? Like Steve Martin throwing popcorn in a man's face thinking it's a viable weapon. Like the way he does that, I can watch over and over and over on a loop. Whereas like you say in Booksmart, set up gag. Yeah, I get it. I've seen it. It's funny. Then move on.
I need to try and rewatch The Jerk because I've not seen it for a long time. And I did try and find it.
Why aren't you watching it now?
Well, because I'm talking to you. I'm going to go for 3.8 here. I think it's the kind of film that will settle in my rotation of the Ferris Bueller's, hopefully American Graffiti. Hopefully they'll be slotted into my rotation, the film I watch maybe once a year. Days Confused. Yeah, this kind of film suits me right down to the ground, and it's a comfort thing, and I'll enjoy it and hopefully introduce it. Well, I don't know what Milo will, he's only 10 months old at the moment, but you know, maybe 12 years time.
A bit young.
Yeah, a bit young. He'll be like, what's this? Where's Thomas the Tank Engine? Small screen score. Ben.
Well, you know, I'm not a huge fan of watching films on television screens or laptops in general. But with something like this, which is not, despite the fact it's in LA, there's not, you know, sprawling vistas and landscapes and whatnot. It's one of those films that is absolutely easy to enjoy on a small screen. You could imagine it as a short comic series, you know, even. So, it suits the small screen fine. Doesn't do it any damage in my eyes. Just as a fan, I'd give it a 4.
Robbie?
Yeah, likewise. I've only seen it on the small screen. Didn't for a moment wish that I had seen it in the cinema, apart from that if I had done, I would have seen it a lot sooner. That was the only factor. I think it works really well on a small screen.
Helen?
I give it a 5. I mean, I've seen it on the small screen only, and it kind of lends itself quite well to that. The only thing that I would say is I probably maybe would have enjoyed it more had I seen it at the cinema with
people laughing,
a group of teenagers.
Yeah.
So maybe that was that element of missing. So if you're going to watch it, then, you know, get some beers in, get the friends around when you're allowed, or, you know, with company.
Yeah,
I think
it's a great
you'd
show.
Have a bit more of a enjoyable experience.
Yeah, I'm going to put 4.5 because I think I didn't see this in the cinema, and I think I just must have been overshadowed, as Robbie said at the top of the show, with I did see Rocket Man. Rocket I did Man. See the other one that you said. I can't remember.
Which that was Aladdin. I think was the same. Aladdin,
yeah, that was. Oh my, yeah.
which would you have rather have seen in the cinema though?
Booksmart and Rocket Man is amazing. Yeah. So yeah,
Rocket Man's a fantastic film.
Yeah. I should have changed out that Aladdin for Booksmart, but yeah, it's the cinema, and it's the thing I'm missing as we record this. I don't know when this will go out. As we record this, we're still in lockdown, and it's the thing that probably hurts me the most is not being able to go to the cinema. And it's for me, painful. That's one of my main really pieces of like self care is go to cinema, locked in a room, don't speak for an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours, depending on the film, and you've let a story take over you.
No one can reach you.
No email.
No one can reach you.
Imagine.
That's it, isn't it? The phone's off. No one can reach you. And you relax into it and let it wash over you. Engagement score for this film, for Booksmart, Ben.
I'm going to sort of give this answer from the point of view of the young people that it's aimed at. And engagement-wise, I would say 4, because I think... Actually, let's go 4.5, because I think what it's trying to do, it absolutely achieves. The places it lost me, it didn't lose my kids. They were still with it right to the end, and would absolutely watch it again and again. So I think what it's trying to do, engagement-wise, is a 4.5. For me, it had me all the way through, didn't check my phone, stayed with it, I was proud of myself. So 4.5.
Robbie?
I'm going to say a 5. I think it's just it grabbed me from, as I say, from the moment the premise falls into place, I was on board and just coasted with it until the very end. I thought it was delightful. And I can easily imagine were this to be, I mean, not that I really watch broadcast TV anymore, but, in this kind of now mostly hypothetical scenario when you can turn on telly late at night and, join a film halfway through, I can easily see myself watching this to the end.
Helen?
It's an hour and 42 minutes. It's pretty zippy. It's when you think about Apatow's 2.5 epic hour comedies and how somehow, in the couple of years ago, comedies somehow ended up being, 2 hours plus when really comedy should only really be about an hour
and
a half sustainable.
Absolutely.
So it's a good length and it zips along, but also it's kind of one of those films you could just kind of have on in the background and it doesn't have to command your attention to enjoy it. So I'm going to give it a solid 4.
Nice. I'm going to 4.5. I enjoyed it. I had me at hello and doing the robot dance down the stairs and stepping out of the Volvo to join in the dance. So that gives us an overall score of 3.98750, which is good. Let's head over to Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, guys, and do follow us there. Because we do talk about the film and talk about the podcast, but also mainly because before we record, we give a shout out. In this case, the shout out is we're reviewing Booksmart with Robbie Reviews and Ben Bailey Smith, and ask for your thoughts and the score out of 5 stars. And we had a few responses for this one. Ben, do you have Twitter in front of you?
Let's choose Lee Thomas. Love this. A wonderful duo at the heart of this coming of age hit, a genre I don't usually enjoy. Super bad, but with characters you actually like. Enjoyably bonkers supporting cast as well. 4.5 out of 5. So he's made the super bad comparison there again, but in a positive way. But I still think that undersells it a little bit.
Yeah.
The super bad comparison. But yeah, this is me.
Robbie, do you want to take one?
Yeah, so this is from Anna. I love this film. I feel it gave a very accurate representation of being in secondary or high school. Full of laughs and a bit of a tearjerker at the end. Love Olivia Wilde's work and can't wait for more. 4 out of 5. And there is, in fact, a new Olivia Wilde film on the way, so that's good news.
Is there?
Oh, good.
Oh, nice. Yeah. What, that she's directed?
Yeah, yeah. She's. Cool. I think is it filming as we speak or is it about to film as we speak? There was a cast switchover for controversy-adjacent reasons.
Oh, dear.
Shia LaBeouf out, Harry Styles in.
Yeah.
Oh, and Harry and Olivia are a thing. I know this from my daughters, so...
Oh, are they?
Yeah, so there's probably a bit of that as well. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, Shia LaBeouf, yeah, of course, yeah. He's been involved in all sorts of bits and pieces. We don't know.
There's a fair few people been involved in lots of bits and pieces, and off to lots of them, I say.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking forward to anything that she does. And it was good. Like, also, when Robbie said about directors, actors turned directors, Regina King's film One Night in Miami gives me a lot of hope for what she's got coming up in the future as well. So,
yeah, and guys, you know, you look. I think it's an achievement what Olivia's done, because if you look at the comparative movie, like, I think every actor would love to just turn around and do, like, oh, like those formative years where I became the person I was, or the people that I knew became the people they were. Like, I think if you get too close to that as a subject, you get what Jonah Hill did with mid-90s. And if you're able to keep some emotional distance, you get something way funnier, which is what I think Olivia Wilde produced here. So, I was surprised to see it was by her. I had no idea. It was just afterwards I was talking about it with my 15-year-old, and she was like, oh, you know, it's the woman who's going to marry Harry Styles, who made that film. I was like, what? And then did some research, and she was right. Oh, 1D connection. There you go. Shout out, Harry.
So this is from Liam, Liam H. Dempsey. One of the finest peons to friendship ever presented on film. Truly joyous filmmaking and riotous fun. 4.5 stars.
Yeah.
Liam has very high standards. If this is one of the finest peons to friendship ever presented on film, 4.5. You know, almost. Almost, but not quite.
Brilliant. Didn't want to seem too excited by it.
But I think he gets the absolute nub of it when he says it's the filmmaking, but it's also the fun. You know, it feels authored. I mean, in a very good way, it feels like an authored piece that's got a coherent directorial view behind it. But it's also just a hoot.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a hoot.
They just keep it moving, do really well. Just keep it moving. You know, they could have easily done Molly's house. What's Molly's house like? Let's see her parents, spend some time with her. So, I haven't got time. Let's just get into it, man. Do you know what I mean? There's some parents. That's it. Let's move on.
And Will Forte as well, I thought those both parents were lovely. But yes, Robbie, yeah, and Ben, can you tell us where we can find you online? Ben, you've got a book out about now. Tell people to go and.
I've got a book out. I've got a book out. Cut all of those and put them, splice them into the show at different places. I have a novel for older kids that comes out in June 2021 with Bloomsbury. It's called Something I Said, and I honestly think it's the best thing I've ever written, and one of the funniest things I've ever written. It's an out and out comedy, laugh out loud, hopefully on every page. It's got a heartwarming element to it as well, I suppose. It's like your classic family comedy. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Hopefully, you know, new and different and innovative as well in its own way.
And Robbie?
Yeah, I've not written a book. In fact, I feel like I've comprehensively squandered the last 12 months. So I'll plug Ben's book again.
Yay! Something I Said.
You can find me writing film criticism in the Telegraph or at telegraph.co.uk and tweeting at Robbie Reviews.
You know, if you stick them all together, those reviews, Robbie, it'll be longer than a book.
That's what I was thinking.
So you could
do a compendium. You could get a book out with minimum effort. Yeah.
That's what Jeremy Clarkson used to do. Just, I can't be bothered. You read them all, pick out my best 50,
yeah,
whack them in a
the
book.
The low effort book. That sounds really appealing. And the best thing is you can go back and change the reviews. So like the stuff you called wrong, you can go back and tinker.
Yeah, nobody will look that up. Right. I was right from the start. Exactly.
Redact the wrong bits and put in the.
Exactly. As I knew this film was going to be.
Interchangeable stars. You can and we've press, already got tap the, them and they change.
Yes. And we've already got the name for your book as well, Robbie. It can be called Collins Dictionary of Film.
Oh, nice.
So they can't sue you.
This is irresistible.
He's just going to call
Collins Dictionary go for that.
Dot, dot, dot of film.
I think a publisher's knocking on the door right now, Robbie. Thank you so much, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure, and it's been great. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks a lot.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.